we're going to talk about the power of procurement to improve food environments. And because we too are from a hospital setting, we don't have any disclosures. And yes, this is moving very rapidly, so let's try to figure out how to go back. Right, okay, we have no disclosures. Okay, so before I get to the background on why procurement, I just want to say a little bit about our research shop and where we come from. So I am a founding co-director of Policy Lab, which is a research center of emphasis within the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. The hospital has about 10 centers of emphasis. Some of them are on genomics and cardiology. We're the center that is focused on health services, population health, child health policy, improving public systems, et cetera. The thing about our model and what allows us to be able to do the kind of thing that I'm going to show you is that we are about 50 to 60 people, but within that, we have a core of 7 people who we call our strategy team, who work across all of the projects to ensure that we think up front about how to do our research so that it is our questions are actually relevant to questions that policymakers or programs need answered. And then throughout the research project, we work to actually connect with those intermediary organizations or people that are actually working on those issues. So as we say, we haul up to Harrisburg, we get to DC, we work a lot with the city, but we really want our research to be actionable. And our strategy team of public health folks and also policy folks really allow us to do that. So why procurement? Okay, well, this story does involve a little bit about Scott Burris, so Scott Burris is going to raise his head a little bit. I was talking to Scott Burris about some work we were doing in Philadelphia, and we were using procurement as a way to actually think differently about putting interventions into place. And the interventions had to do with mental health issues related to kids in the child welfare system, and then specifically the over-prescribing of antipsychotics to those kids. And I'm not going to talk about that today, but we'll maybe talk about that another time. But in talking to Scott Burris about this and about how we used procurement, he said, sounds like a framework of sorts. And I said, oh, I don't know, maybe it is a framework. And so he said, well, you know, maybe you should think about putting together some kind of framework so that you could actually describe the process and make it accessible also, I think, to non-lawyers. And so then he had us hit up Jeff Swanson to give us a quick tutorial on frameworks and what they were, and this project was born. What we found in doing the research is that most of the examples about sort of innovative uses of procurement really fell in the obesity and nutrition area, and that's why we focus on them in this presentation. So I can now move to that. And I can talk to you, Jeff, offline about whether after talking to Scott, it went, you know, from that big happy circle to the little one. Suffice to say, there were several drafts of the paper that we wrote for PHLR. Okay. So we set about to create a pathway for purchasing. As I said, obesity and chronic health conditions are, as we all know, linked to poor nutrition and diet. We have a number of projects in our center related to this. We know that government is a huge purchaser of goods and services, and so it's a great area to influence if you can. Government has used its power of procurement to promote certain policies, especially in the green sort of green buying area. I have to say that was probably the other area where there were the most examples, but we decided to focus on food and nutrition for obvious reasons. And then procurement really does offer an alternative path to mandates. So if you can work within the existing procurement rules and actually figure out how to add additional criteria that don't require a new law or regulation, you really can sort of like skim under the radar, as it were, of some of the what comes out when you actually have to notice or, you know, create a notice or comment period around creating new regulations or new law. So it might be, especially with a tricky issue or an issue that has a lot of sort of public rancor or debate about it, it might be a more expedient way to influence change. So we created this diagram, and Jeff, I promise our next one is going to be better. This was the sort of framework that we came up with. And basically, I'm going to talk about the first part of it. So what we found when we looked at all of the evidence was that really there were four stages to all of this work, that there was a stage around solicitation formation, solicitation completion, market cycle, this is sort of the names that we put to them, and then results. Now, in solicitation formation, and I wish I could move and point. So anyway, if I had one of those red pointers we have at Grand Rounds, I would be pointing to the very top box of stage one, solicitation formation. That's really the inputs. That's where you have all the laws and rules that are already in effect. And you have an arrow going up to that because that's where really research tools and standards that the public health community creates can be used to influence those laws and rules. So, for example, in New York City, Mayor Bloomberg actually used the dietary guidelines for Americans to basically identify an executive order, to issue an executive order that was related to better nutrition standards for purchasing. Similarly, in Los Angeles, they used a health impact assessment to actually look at how they might do buying differently and how they could create different sodium standards in their food purchasing. And then finally, in Minnesota, they actually did something very innovative, which is way before they even created the request for purchasing, they actually created a collaborative where outside researchers talked to vendors about what they might be able to do to create different standards within the RFP, and then the results of that was actually used in creating the RFP. And remember, part of the problem with purchasing rules is that most places have very strict rules on letting government and purchasers talk to each other. So these were all ways that government was able to sort of do workarounds, if you will, to bring some new standards into the purchasing that they did. And I'm going to give it to Dorothy to bring us to the end.
Thank you, Kathleen. So as Kathleen just talked about, in stage one, which is the solicitation formation stage, we found a variety of evidence that supported sort of innovative practices that could influence the solicitation formation. When we think about an RFP, when we think about a government making a purchase, what you really are thinking about in most people's minds is what we call stage two, which is the solicitation completion and selection section. And then this is sort of what the public sees, and this is when the RFP comes out, this is when the vendors respond, and then based on the guidelines that are in the RFP, this is when the government makes their selection. But what we really found was because of the rules around fair and open competition, you really do not have a lot of opportunity to influence this stage the way that you do with stage one. So in a way, you kind of missed part of the boat if you get to stage two, and that's when you're really thinking about how can I make this procurement to promote healthier eating and to promote sort of a healthier food environment. You really want to have stepped in around stage one. But don't worry, you haven't completely missed the boat. There is another boat, which is stage three. So stage three, the market cycle, I'm going to step back and just make sure everyone saw that this is, you have the RFP, the vendor response, and then the vendor selection. And then that's when the government, as I said, makes their formal decision. And then for stage three, the market cycle, Michelle had the question of, you know, some people say, what about the market? Well, sometimes the government could be part of the market, too, and that was what we were pointing to. We talked about the $2 billion that different levels of government are spending on procurement. Briefly, the product is distributed, the industry and vendors react to the new demand or the new product. And then ideally we see changes in consumer norms and behaviors and reaction. And so what we were looking for when we looked at this stage was instances in which procurement was changing without the formal process of going through a solicitation, competition, and selection. So what we found was an example in the Indiana Department of Corrections, where because they had a goal of having a healthier population, they actually worked with their vendor in a post-solicitation environment to create new standards that lowered the sodium intake and lowered the cholesterol for the population. Now, of course, that's a very controlled population, but it's a good example of where the government was able to work with the vendor in a post-solicitation period. Similarly, in Massachusetts, another example that we saw was a sort of ongoing monitoring and feedback loop that developed between the government and some of the vendors that they had selected that didn't just end when the bid went out. It was something that was continuous, and that feedback was used to refine the product that the vendor was supplying throughout the entire process. And then, of course, to end, what we really want to see is healthier eating, right? And we want to see that there is improved health among the population, whether it's a very controlled population, such as, you know, a particular, a state nursing home, or more broadly, we want to see an improvement in New York City. You know, every public hospital, every public entity is supposed to be reaching these improved nutrition guidelines. Now, those conclusions are a little more tricky to draw. We didn't really get into that, but just in wrapping up, just a couple of our final kind of our thoughts for going forward and how we can improve the process of procurement. So number one is promotion of public-private partnerships to expand healthier food purchasing. And really this is key early on. It cannot be a partnership that starts after you put in your bid. And this is for both the government and the public and the private entities as well, to make sure that you're in communication and reaching out. Our second recommendation was development of methods and tools for assessment and surveillance of healthy outcomes. One of the challenges that we found was that it's very difficult to show that the outcomes are linked to the changes in the product, whether it's green purchasing or consuming food. So thinking about how can we create innovative tools that make that an easier process. And then our final recommendation was to deepen knowledge of factors affecting healthy food consumption and industry participation, and better understanding how those cycles work, and key points for innovation and creating influence. So thank you so much.